Chapter 4, Danger in the Night. Mina Murray's Journal.
August 10. The funeral of the poor sea captain today was most touching. Everyone here thinks the captain was a hero, even if it did seem that he became mad in the end. But he brought his ship into port even after he died. Poor Lucy seems very upset. She is restless all the time. I think she is having terrible dreams, but she will not speak of them. When she was young, Lucy would sleepwalk. Now she is starting again. 12 August. Last night, I woke and found Lucy gone from our bedroom. I walked to the church where we liked to sit. I saw a figure dressed in white lying on a tombstone. As I got nearer, I saw a dark figure bent over her. I yelled and ran forward, and the figure turned to me. I could see red, hateful eyes and a pale face. Then the figure vanished, and I found Lucy asleep on the tombstone. I fastened a cloak around her shoulders. In doing so, I must have pricked her with the pin, for there were drops of blood on her neck. 14 August. Lucy has gotten worse. She wakes up in the middle of the night and tries to leave the room. She is very pale and weak during the day. I have finally received a letter from Jonathan. He is ill in a hospital in Budapest. I must go to him, but I am afraid of leaving Lucy alone. So I have sent word to her fiancé Arthur. He is coming soon and has promised to take Lucy and her mother to his London estate. As soon as he arrives, I must leave for Budapest. I do hope Lucy recovers while I am gone. 24 August. After a long trip, I arrived at Jonathan's hospital in Budapest. He is weak and tired, but alive. He has had some terrible shock. When he woke, he asked me for his coat, as he wanted to get something from the pocket. I saw his journal. He saw me looking at it, and after a moment, he held my hand and told me he loved me dearly. Then he said I should read his journal, but he never wanted to discuss it ever again. So I learned about Jonathan's ordeal at Castle Dracula. It is so strange, but I will not discuss it with him. He survived, and we are together. 2 September. Jonathan has recovered much of his previous health and vigor. We were married yesterday in a small Budapest church. We are so much in love. Tomorrow, we begin the long journey back to England. And so Mina and Jonathan return to London to start their new life together. However, when they arrived, Mina found a letter from Arthur Holmwood waiting for her. The letter contained tragic news. Lucy had died.
3 Arthur Holmwood's story. Lucy and her mother came to live with me in London. At first, she seemed merry and did not show any signs of the tiredness or weakness that had plagued her in Whitby. But after a week, she suddenly fell ill and would not leave her bed. I sent for my dear friend, the physician, Dr. Jack Seward, who came at once. He found two small, strange wounds on her neck and determined that she had lost a lot of blood. But how? There was not a drop of blood in her bed. At a loss for an explanation, Dr. Seward called on his old professor, Dr. Abraham Van Helsing. This learned man was gracious enough to come at once after he heard the details of Lucy's case. When Dr. Van Helsing arrived, we all went to Lucy's room. She was ghastly pale. The red seemed to have gone even from her lips and gums, and the bones of her face stood out prominently. Her breathing was painful to hear. Lucy lay motionless and did not seem to have strength to speak, so for a while, We were all silent. Then Van Helsing beckoned, and we went gently out of the room. The instant we had closed the door, he said, "My God, this is dreadful. There is no time to be lost. She will die for sheer want of blood. There must be a transfusion of blood at once. Arthur, you are the youngest and strongest of us three." He did not have to speak further. I swore that Lucy could have my blood down to the last drop if need be. Dr. Van Helsing performed the transfusion immediately. Apparently his technique was correct, with my blood coursing in Lucy's veins. She showed a marked improvement. The next day I had to leave for my father's house outside London. He was gravely ill, and I needed to see him. Reluctantly, I left Lucy in the care of Dr. Seward and Dr. Van Helsing. They seem capable of bringing Lucy back to good health.
Dr. Seward's story. Shortly after Arthur left to attend his ill father, Van Helsing told me he needed to return to his home in Amsterdam to fetch some books related to Lucy's illness. "I will only be gone a few days," he told me. "Watch over Lucy, especially at night. Put a chair near her bed and do not let her sleepwalk. This is of extreme importance. If you must sleep, sleep during the day." He would not give me any explanation for this strange request, only saying that he needed to consult the books he left in his apartment. When I told Lucy's mother that Dr. Van Helsing had directed that I should sit up with Lucy, she almost pooh-poohed the idea, pointing out her daughter's renewed strength and excellent spirits. I was firm, however, and made preparations for my long vigil. She did not in any way object, but she looked at me gratefully whenever I caught her eye. After a long while, she seemed to sink off to sleep, but with an effort, she seemed to pull herself together and shook it off. It was apparent that she did not want to sleep, so I tackled the subject at once. "You do not want to sleep?" "No, I am afraid." "But, my dear girl, you may sleep tonight. I am here watching you, and I can promise that nothing will happen." "How good you are to me. Then I will sleep." And as soon as she said sleep, she sighed in relief and sank back asleep. All night long I watched over her. She never stirred, but slept on and on in a deep, tranquil, life-giving sleep. There was a smile on her face, and it was evident that no bad dreams had come to disturb her peace of mind. For 2 nights, I watched over Lucy. During the day, I tended my regular duties at the mental asylum where I work. This schedule began to take its toll on me. On the 3rd night, I arrived at Arthur's estate and found that Lucy was up and in cheerful spirits. When she shook hands with me, she looked sharply at my face and said, "No sitting up tonight for you. You are worn out. I am quite well again." "Indeed I am. And if there is to be any sitting up, it is I who will sit up with you." I would not argue the point, but went and had my supper. Then Lucy took me upstairs and showed me a room next to her own, where a cozy fire was burning. "Now," she said, "you must stay here. I shall leave this door open, and my door too. You can lie on the sofa. If I want anything, I shall call out, and you can come to me at once." I could not but agree, for I was dog-tired and could not have sat up had I tried. So after making her renew her promise to call me if she needed anything, I lay on the sofa and forgot all about everything. I was conscious of the professor's hand on my head and started awake in a second. "And how is our patient?" he said. "Let us see," I replied. When we entered Lucy's room, we saw a terrible sight. There on the bed lay poor Lucy, more horribly white than ever. Even her lips were white, and her gums seemed to have shrunk back from her teeth, as we sometimes see in a corpse after a prolonged illness. Van Helsing immediately felt for her heartbeat. "It is not too late," he said. "It beats but feebly. All our work is undone. We must begin again. There is no young Arthur here now. I have to call on you yourself this time, friend John. He performed another blood transfusion using my blood this time. Lucy slept well into the day, and when she awoke, she was fairly well and strong, though not nearly so much so as the day before. That evening, Dr. Van Helsing gave Lucy a necklace of what looked like flowers. At first, she was delighted, but then she said, "Oh, Professor, I believe you are playing a joke on me. Why, these flowers are only common garlic." "Not so, my dear," replied Dr. Van Helsing sternly. "I never jest. There is a grim purpose in what I do. Now sit still a while. Come with me, friend John, and you shall help me deck the room with garlic." The professor's actions were certainly odd, and not to be found in any book that I had ever heard of. First, he fastened the windows and latched them securely. Next, taking a handful of flowers, he rubbed them all over the sashes. Then he rubbed garlic all over the doorknob, above, below, and at each side and around the fireplace in the same way. When Lucy was ready in bed, he fixed a wreath of garlic around her neck. The last words he said to her were, "Take care you do not disturb it, and even if the air feels stuffy, do not open the window or the door." "I promise," said Lucy, "and thank you both 1,000 times. Oh, what I have done to be blessed with such friends." As we left the house, Van Helsing said, "Tonight I can sleep in peace after 2 nights of travel and much reading in the day between. Tomorrow in the morning, call for me, and we will see our pretty miss." The next morning, we arrived early and met Lucy's mother. She told us that she had entered Lucy's room and found the air thick with the smell of garlic. Worried, she opened the window and took the necklace of garlic away from Lucy's neck. As she spoke, Van Helsing's face turned ashen gray. He did not speak a word to the mother, but as soon as she left, he sat down heavily in a chair. "God, God, God," he said, "what has this poor mother done? In her ignorance, in her desire to give her daughter fresh air, she has lost her daughter's body and soul." But just as suddenly, his fit of despair left, and he jumped to his feet. "Quick, we must act," he said. "It is I now who must donate the blood for Lucy's transfusion." Again we performed the transfusion, and again we saw health flow back into Lucy's pale and waxen cheeks. After the transfusion, we left Lucy sleeping peacefully in her bed. I had to return to the asylum to catch up on my work, in which I was falling behind. That afternoon, I did not receive a summons from Van Helsing, so with a weary body, I headed home for a good night's rest. In the morning, I had a shock. A telegram arrived, dated the previous day from Van Helsing. It read, "I must travel on errand. Do not fail to watch over Lucy tonight. Very important." My God, I was supposed to be with her last night. In a panic, I left for Arthur's estate at once. On arriving, I ran into Van Helsing, who was just arriving himself. "What?" he said. "Did you not spend the night here? Didn't you get my telegram?" We tried ringing the front bell, but there was no answer. Frightened, we ran to the rear of the house and looked in the kitchen windows. The four servants were lying on the floor, as if dead. Van Helsing broke the window, and we rushed in. From their labored breathing and the smell of an opened bottle of wine, we quickly realized they had been drugged. We ran to Lucy's room and threw open the doors. How shall I describe what we saw? On the bed lay Lucy and her mother. The mother's white face had a look of terror upon it. She must have died from a heart attack. By her side lay Lucy, her skin as white as chalk and her throat bare, showing the two little wounds looking horribly white and mangled. Without a word, the professor bent over Lucy, listening for life. Then, leaping to his feet, he cried out to me, "It is not yet too late. Quick, wake the servants." Van Helsing had them prepare a hot bath for Lucy and told me to send for Arthur. That afternoon, Arthur returned in a grim mood. His father had just passed away, and now his fiancée was on the edge of death. He went to her room and knelt by her bed. She was barely awake, and when she saw Arthur, she said, "My dear, bend closer so that I may kiss you." Arthur started to lean over, but Van Helsing grabbed him and pulled him back. Lucy suddenly hissed in anger. Her teeth were white and long. Suddenly, her face softened, and she took Arthur's hand in hers. "My dear, I love you." Then she died. "Poor girl," I said. "It is the end." "No, it is only the beginning," whispered Van Helsing.